Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
And welcome to another Top 10 Debate. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Hamflett from What Culture, to talk about WWE Fate's Worse Than Burial. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts where we review Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW Dynamite, pay-per-views. We have interviews, more roundtable discussions like this one, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Hamblin to discuss his list, 10 WWE Fates Worse Than Burial. And I know this wasn't the inspiration behind it, but I did want to talk to you about a tweet you sent out, I think yesterday, regarding the burial of Triple H back in the day for the curtain call.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Like, the most overstated burial in wrestling history. And of course it is, because it's Triple H's and it has to be part of this narrative that somehow he's like a, I don't know, like, I resent the idea that, like, Triple H, he of middle-class stock that married into an empire, a billionaire family, is somehow rags to riches. I just won't have any aspect of Triple H's life being deemed rags to riches. And I think his lack of that is why he always, like, leaned on this run in 1996. And I've wrote about this in other articles before, that, you know, by comparison to today's wrestlers, looks like a WrestleMania push. he was supposed to win the King of the Ring and he didn't. We all know that. And that worked out for the best anyway, because we've got Steve Austin. And he kind of disappeared underwater, you could say, for about 6 months, generously, because he worked some free-for-all matches, obviously the precursor to the kickoffs. He was on television, he was losing. Quite a bit. And then he worked the Buried Alive in Your House in the October of 1996. So bear in mind, it was May when Vince McMahon said, "I'm really sorry. I got to bury you 6 foot under. Like, I've got to make a point to the locker room after the curtain call. Like, you're going to be down for a lot. You're going to eat and learn to like the taste of it." That was what he said. And I guess, like, Vince just ran out of in October 1996. Because he lost to Steve Austin in the opener of a pay-per-view in October. And then the next night, Mr. Buried won the Intercontinental Championship, back when that was still prestigious. Like, won the belt. Turned out that he'd hatched a plan with Mr. Perfect all along. So, and Mr. Perfect helped him win. So that storyline began in about a month. So you can basically backdate that burial by another month, because they already had a storyline in the works for him to win that belt. Like, 5 months, if that, where, like, he lost on house shows, which nobody could see and hardly anybody read about. So, yeah, the fact that he's lent on this as a sort of, yeah, we've all had our struggles, right? When, like, Dolph Ziggler must just put his hands on his hips and look at him and think, are you kidding? Do you want to see 3/4 of my goddamn career and find 6 month periods that are as good as the one you had when you were getting buried? I compared it to Ricochet, obviously.
Yeah.
Ricochet's entire career in WWE since getting the call up from NXT has been worse than Triple H's apparently terrible 6 months. And I just, like, there are fates worse than burials. There are different kinds of burials. There is nuance to the burial. We're going to get to this in the list. It's a subjective thing anyway, so people listening might disagree, or they might deem things as, you know, a burial might be too harsh, something like that. But Triple H has always been keen to call that a burial. And it was just 6 months making it look like he was getting bollocked for something, and then everything was fine.
It's like when those, like, really rich YouTubers do the whole, "Oh, can I live off a pound for a day?"
Yeah.
And they go, I've had it tough. And he's like, yeah, but you've put 8 ads in this video and you're living in your mansion. Have you factored that into it? Just no. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. Ridiculous.
And what did you do yesterday and tomorrow before you went with today for the quiz?
Thankfully, I knew I was going to live on £1 today. So I bought in a shed load of food. So there we go.
All right. It's 6 spaghetti bolognese last night. So I think it should be good for food until about 10 o'clock tonight. So I can make more. It's like those frigging, we're never going to get to the list. It's always a frigging Times or a Telegraph article. Funny that, where a kid is 21.
Yeah.
Or 25 or whatever, and they're like, yeah, I've got no debt. I've managed to save 40 grand for a deposit. And then you read the second paragraph, and it turns out that both his parents are doctors, and he's living at home rent-free and has been all his life, included, and he's got like a full-time job. Yeah, yeah, I actually work in the medical profession. I'm not a doctor, I just work in the medical. Oh, how did you get that job? Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah. Like, you just try and pretend that the privilege they're talking about in the second paragraph isn't privilege at all. It's just, why does everybody stay and live at home rent-free with their doctor parents? Why isn't everybody doing this? I don't understand why there's a housing crisis or mass poverty. And I just don't get it.
Have you seen the TikTok where the girl's like, if you're homeless, just go and buy a house?
Just get a house.
Oh, really genius. Anyway, there are things worse than being buried in WWE. Yeah. And let's start with a man who we're looking to surpass in the podcast charts by talking about him. And that's getting blackballed. And the specific example, of course, Double J.
Awesome. You say I want it to surpass. I'm happy to remain number 2 in his shadow forever. One of my heroes, Jeff Jarrett. I love him. I like his wrestling. I really do. I like several elements of his quite funny act. It was that famous, now memed, comment by Eddie Graham, I think it was, broke a million guitars, never drew a dime. Like, objectively not true, but let's not just pretend that the breaking of a million guitars wasn't really, really fun. Like, it's just great watching somebody get kabonged with the old acoustic equalizer. Slapnut is piss funny. Trying to be your own version of Stone Cold Steve Austin in TNA was great.
Yeah.
Burying Steve Austin on your first night back in WWE took some balls and was questionable. Austin 316 is blasphemous. You know, and it's selling 40 bazillion t-shirts, and maybe pull back on that one. I just love him. Like, Andy Murray once said this, and it's 100% true. If you give £1 to Jeff Jarrett, he will make £1.01 out of pro wrestling. And I love that about the guy. And I love that he was publicly fired by Vince McMahon in an act of, like, McMahon-esque pettiness.
He
bought his competition, right? He doesn't get to be Jeff Jarrett's boss. Jeff Jarrett made this point on his podcast, which you should go and listen to, but maybe listen to all of ours first. It might give us a chance of topping him. He made the point that was like, well, how can somebody fire you if they're not your boss? Jeff Jarrett sat on a massive Turner contract until about 2002 and just never went to work for Vince. But Vince was obviously making the point that he wasn't going to hire him. That was the issue here. But I love that Jeff Jarrett wasn't even on the Nitro for Vince to do his big grand gesture on the simulcast. So he had to get one of his staffers to find some tape of Jeff Jarrett to put on a television to replicate the idea that he was watching.
Is that true?
Yeah. So for those that haven't seen it, there's an image that I've put in the list, but go and watch the Raw, the last sort of Nitro Raw simulcasting. It's the go-home show for WrestleMania 17, 2001 in the network. And Vince McMahon is in this room where there's 2 televisions backstage, which is weird, isn't it? Because the television that he's on, he's always going to be on when the camera's on him. That's a bit odd. But like, one says WWF, one says WCW, and he points at the WCW television as if he's just looked at it and gone, Jeff Jarrett. you know how you used to love spelling your name? No, you gave him that gimmick, but yeah. You know how you used to love spelling your name, Jeff? Well, that's, and then he does this weird thing where he wants to say gone, but he's like, that's G, double O, quadruple N, triple E, goon. Like that. He does this big catchphrase thing. Yeah. Jeff Jarrett wasn't on Nitro at that point, or maybe, if I'm not mistaken, on that Nitro at all. So they had to send some sort of busybody out to go and get some tape to put in that TV to manufacture a scene where Vince could fire him. That's how excited he was to fire him, or indeed not hire him in a year's time. What did Jeff do? Form his own wrestling company. Take 2 of them, Vince, and call me in the morning. And the best thing is that we learned through this podcast years later that Jeff, I loved it. I love the gumption of the man. Jeff Jarrett called Vince to say, I'm setting up TNA. Do you want to maybe have a working agreement? What response were you expecting? Like, I just... the proverbial guitar at the head over the phone, probably. Vince wasn't interested, funnily enough.
Like, well, to be fair, maybe he thought that Vince was sacking the goon with the way he was spelling Jeff's name.
He's like, famed collaborator Vince McMahon, 1 year after firing you specifically. You know, they're finally working together on this new rival organization I'm setting up.
Amazing.
Great. Absolutely brilliant. Guy. Yeah. Effectively blackballed until he made an industry for himself. And like, look, let's be sort of like earnestly positive too. Created work for people, created opportunities for people in the very existence, funny as it was sometimes, of TNA. Lots of wrestlers, I'm sure, would have been grateful for the strange opportunities they received in TNA, especially when the industry like almost immediately fell into a decline, like after the fact. So there was like a net positive out of that as well.
So obviously blackball is getting blackballed is worse than getting buried, and getting whitewashed is worse than getting blackballed, because it's insane how frequently WWE just goes, no, don't remember them. Sorry, mate. No, I have no idea. It's maddening, isn't it?
Yeah, that's worse, I think, because nothing's ever forever in wrestling. So the very notion of being blackballed in 2021, or indeed back in 2001 when it happened to Jeff Jarrett, is that, well, as Jeff proved, you never blackballed, because there's always somebody that'll give you work if you've been over before, if you've made money in wrestling before. And Christ, if you've made money for Vince McMahon, he's, you know, going to at least entertain a meeting with you or a call with you. It was Chris Jericho, wasn't it, recently? He said that, like, on, I think it was on Austin's podcast, where he said he believed himself to still be on good terms with Vince McMahon. It triggered this conversation of like, yeah, who's ever thought about this? But like, once his AEW contract runs out, if the price was right, could he go back? And I think the answer is yes, isn't it?
Yeah.
We've reached the point now. Like, my turning point forever, I've said this example before, was Eric Bischoff. He shook hands with Eric Bischoff on a stage and said, you're going to have Raw now. And, you know, I was 17. Tiny mind exploded into pieces that Eric Bischoff could appear on Monday Night Raw. But what that means is that the precedent has been set. You know, Tony Khan could one day appear on Monday Night Raw, or as I'm sure AEW fans would rather have me say, Vince McMahon could one day appear on AEW Dynamite. But the point remains the same. Whitewashing, in a way, is much worse, because they either on purpose or inadvertently kind of disappear you from the conversation, and that affects your value. And if your value is affected, you stand less chance of being able to get back in the door that so many of these people walk back in. The example I used for this was Emma, because she was just such a consistent presence in a women's division that was still taking shape. She had that like transcendent match with Paige at Arrival that was basically this big announcement from NXT that, oh, by the way, women's wrestling is back and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. It's this inevitable thing that's going to happen on the main roster and we're going to make it so. Then she got the call up. She was completely buried because they did that awful thing where like Santino came out and said, like, I'm funny, look at my funny friend. And they gave no context to why Emma had bubbles and did that weird dance. So she was ruined. So back she goes to NXT for yet more bangers, a total forgotten classic, a lost classic with Asuka as the opener from TakeOver London that completely established Asuka as this like terrifying threat on NXT. And then she did it again for her when Asuka got called up to the main roster.
I remember, 2017, yeah.
TLC, another banger. Asuka is here, fear her. And then they sacked her like 4 days later. She put her over again on Monday Night Raw and they just sacked her days later. There was, of course, the Emelina thing, the debacle seemed to mark her cards, unfortunately. But I don't know. It's her. There's other examples that, like, I don't have to mind now, but there are other examples where it's the thing I always go to is, imagine the people that you just never see on those giant lists of people they bring back for the Raw reunions. Who is not sharing punch with Sergeant Slaughter in the poorly lit party in the general manager's office? It's those people that have been like punished as bad, if not worse, than a blackballing, because the whole point is wrestlers are supposed to be people to be talked about and there's no conversation about them.
And the thing is, it's such a surreal conversation to have, because like getting whitewashed, like Benoit is the obvious name, which is a very, very different set of scenarios to other people. Obviously, they had the stuff with Hogan, and that's an entirely different conversation in and of itself as well. But it's so sudden as well. If Vince wakes up one day and thinks, I don't want them to be associated with the history, the legacy of this product, they're gone. There was a period, wasn't there, where they just suddenly decided, get rid of Roman Reigns. Like, Roman Reigns is gone. Yeah. And they showed like Seth Rollins winning the world title at WrestleMania, and they just sort of cut around Roman and went, yep, there he was, beating some guy, who cares? It's Like I say, to be hard with the same brush as someone like Benoit is a real shock.
Just imagine if that clip, like if the curb stomp was still banned, how would they show any of that? Like they ban the move and they ban the man. Like Seth Rollins is here, he wins. Yeah, like again, it's all like a Vince McMahon wakes up and thinks this that day deal, which I know comes up a lot on these podcasts, but I feel like it's relevant. I feel like we have to factor it in. You're dealing with a mind that nobody's been able to ever truly hack into. And yeah, like the Benoit comparison is sad but apt, because there is one guy above all else that like doesn't like warrant the oxygen of discussion unless people are comfortable and prepared to have it. Nobody really should be, with obvious, you know, exceptions here and there, nobody should really be subject to that same kind of treatment.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's move on. Let's talk about something which has kind of been talked about again recently, with that A&E documentary stuff about, there was one about Randy Savage, I think someone was describing as a bit of a hit piece. And related to that, it's one thing WWE often employs is that sort of documentary hatchet job is the terminology you've used here, which is so spot on. You think of the Ultimate Warrior, you think of, well, Bret Hart. Like, talk me through it, because it is... It's again WWE going, we want to change the way people remember you. And if it's not remembering you, it's remembering you in the worst possible way.
Yeah, I think what I think this one of the reasons this happens, I think, and it has happened less in the era of the network. I will say that. I wonder if they're starting to think about what exactly it is they commit to that streaming service, because you can kind of stumble upon stuff. It's a bit like, and we'll do lists at What Culture sometimes, you find little cheekies that they probably should have cut by now. And Peacock even more so, there's going to be more of that. And I just think they want to make those things less because they want to look like a positive organization. It's all about the brand, that sort of thing. But for years, I think WWE approached some of these projects like an episode of Raw. You know how you can tell Vince McMahon is bored of Raw before the episode's even finished? Like he's already mentally on the jet, heading to not to the next town at the moment, but like heading back to the drawing board for next week's episode and next week. Like nothing ever sits still in WWE. Like they're probably thinking of WrestleMania Backlash before they're thinking of WrestleMania's End, you know? And I think they used to approach documentaries like the same way. The Ultimate Warrior doc, which everybody knows about, even if you've not seen it, there'll be a way for you to track it down online, I'm sure. It was a DVD that's probably been discontinued and it never made it to the network. It was just an hour and a half of everybody at the top level of the company, Vince McMahon, Bruce Pritchard, Jim Ross, and others, finding different ways to bury the Ultimate Warrior, just talking about his awful promos, his awful matches, his awful look. I mean, imagine that. Like, everything about the Ultimate Warrior, they were just critical of. Spliced with, like, some gentle ribbing, but the likes of Chris Jericho, Christian, and Edge, basically fawning over how much they loved the Ultimate Warrior when they were kids. So they were kind of mocking a bit, like Christian does this impression of his promo that's really funny, and it's about Hulk Hogan, it's about spaceships and all this sort of other warrior nonsense. But he's doing it word for word from memory because he obviously loves it. And, you know, Ultimate Warrior was the reason I fell in love with wrestling, because, I mean, just look at him, right? Like, if you're five, look at the Ultimate Warrior. And I was like, well, I think I'll watch this for the rest of my stupid life. Like the Ultimate Warrior, like short as it was, and in, like sort of in short bursts as it was, had this impact. And they just did away with all that and made this documentary where they just picked every single bit of him, because he was unpopular because he'd fallen out with them because there was all these various issues with the Warrior. And they made that show as if like time was to come to an end the second that somebody said cut. Not thinking that like, oh, years later, we might want to bring him back into the fold. Like, what if Vince and Jim make friends in the end and we maybe want to put him into the Hall of Fame, and you know, like, which is what all that happened in the end. And then they do those condescending DVD profiles where it's like, wasn't the Ultimate Warrior brilliant? And it was like, well, you literally weren't saying that 6 years ago on this DVD. Why I mentioned Brett in the article. Brett basically came back to WWE for the first time post-Montreal, shook hands with Vince for a picture, etc., because he cared a great deal about his legacy. He knew that they would make this type of stuff, and he wanted his legacy to be like truthful and well remembered, and WWE had access to the vault of his footage. And it was going to be, the DVD on Brett was going to be called Screwed, the Bret Hart story. Now I wonder what part of Bret Hart's career they're going to linger on with that as a title. And you see the Warrior thing and you see the talk. Apparently the talking heads exist. Brett has, yeah. Like, it's almost like as rare as the Tom McGee tape. I think like Brett was very, he named, I want to say it was Jerry Lawler. Go and Google it. So I'm not like, I'd never want to misquote the excellence of execution, but I'm sure there was somebody that had like done those kind of comments where, yeah, be as critical as you like. Say the things you didn't like about him. Was he a bit of a misery sometimes? Was he a bit late to shows? Say that and we'll isolate those. And those clips exist somewhere that people taped for Screw the Bret Hart story that ultimately never happened because Brett came back and he got his 3-disc box set the way it should be done. Pre-network, obviously, the way that like was seen as a great way to pay tribute to a career. One more was Confidential in 2002. That's kind of short-lived behind-the-scenes show they did. They did an episode on Steve Austin's 2002 walkout, and it was just like 40 minutes of Vince and Jim Ross saying like, what a piece of garbage, the guy that's made all this money for us within a few years. And then like towards the end, it was like, by the way, police were called and something's happened with Deborah. And I guess we're going to see how that develops. And it, you know, like that was true. And that was really bad. Like an important black mark against Steve Austin's name. But the whole thing was just designed to like just bury this guy that's literally left your company 6 weeks ago, having taken it back to the promised land, bury him 6 feet deep. And then he was back in 2003. He's like, yeah, Confidential thing is just for telly. It's fine. Ignore all that. We're happy you're back. It's Austin, Steve Austin, glass smashing. Like, even they would be like, Vince probably didn't remember that he did it.
No.
Austin's take, I didn't appreciate that Confidential hit piece, mind Vince. What's that now? I'm sorry, I'm just planning for a I Quit match for my daughter. You have to remind us. Like, to him, just rolls on. The whole thing always rolls on, like a raw commercial break. But yeah, like, these things to the performers themselves, or as they would be, were pretty big lines in the sand.
And personified by the fact, yeah, he left. Stone Cold walked out and he went, right, time to bury him in a promo. Like, no discussions. Yeah. Give me the mic, right. I'm going to tell him it's all Stone Cold's fault and he's the worst thing that ever happened to the WWF. Okay. Lovely transition here. You mentioned a screw job here because that is another way they can do things, something worse than bury you. And I'm not just talking about Bret Hart here.
No, Wendy Richter was kind of the original WWE screw job, I guess you could say. I have a feeling there's another one going back to the 60s or 70s or something, might correct me on, but certainly Vince McMahon Jr., the Vince that screwed Brett, worked with the Fabulous Moolah to do the same to his WrestleMania co-headliner, Wendy Richter. Jeez. Something like 6 months after, obviously, she won the women's title at WrestleMania 1 with the help of Cyndi Lauper, who was integral to the Rock and Wrestling Connection, integral to Vince's relationship with MTV, which was integral to WrestleMania, blah, blah, blah. It's always the people that were most important that he was happy to cut the heads off to assume more power. And they were just in complete disagreement over pay. Obviously, women's wrestling was marginalized to an even greater degree than it is now. And Richter wasn't being compensated in the way that she believed was fair. As a star, as a proper star, like that was the second biggest match of the first, maybe the third, but like you're talking like one of two or three main event matches that people were talking about because of the inclusion of the celebrities and because WWF, Vince McMahon's version of WWF, was so novelty to that New York media market that like the women wrestling as well was an even greater novelty. So she had that appeal too. She had these like rock star looks. She was secondary babyface in the Hulk Hogan cartoon, which got massive like exposure to WWF at large. So like she was a known name, but money talked louder than any of that to Vince McMahon, and he was happy to get a shot of her by November. So think about like we're only 6-7 months on from WrestleMania. They didn't tell. It's a weird match to go and watch. I would recommend it. Fabulous Moolah. Like, it's evidently Fabulous Moolah based on her body type. Mm-hmm. She's in a mask dressed as the spider, and she like catches Richter in a tight pinfall for the, you know, the usual thing where like trying to capture the pin. Richter still rolls her shoulder and kicks out at one, but the referee just counts anyway because he's obviously in on it. Moolah snatches the title, pulls the mask off. Oh, it's Moolah as the spider, holds the belt up. Richter's so confused by it that she kind of wants to protect the industry a little bit and sells. What's going on, ref? Why have I been cheated? Blah, blah, blah. Only to find out that it was all as legit as it looked. And she's not getting the title back. And she's not getting the pay that she believes she deserves. And so the story goes, she left the arena in disgust, still in her gear, like into the streets of New York, flew home and didn't speak to Fabulous Moolah ever again. And wasn't on terms with Vince until she went in the Hall of Fame 25 years later. Jeez. So it stuck and it stung.
Yes, I've seen that clip and I know exactly what you mean. It's just when you know the context of it all, it's a bit heartbreaking, isn't it? Because like you say, it's...
She's kind of working still. She's sort of working, Richter, yeah.
And it's just, like you say, Brett spitting on Vince is how you would react. Mm-hmm. And all the madness that surrounds the Montreal Screwjob. And this is kind of just overlooked because it's so baffling that in such a short time frame, they've gone from, thanks for helping us with that, to, right, bollocks to you. Well, if you're not going to do that, then you'll do it one way or another. So maddening. Yeah, this is a fascinating list. As I said, you can read it all at whatculture.com. Just search for 10 WWE fakes worse than burial. Some really interesting ones on there. Some recent stuff as well referenced, and a push actually referenced as a fate worse than burial on some occasions. But one thing I want to finally mention here, because I think it's so funny, you've got getting blackballed or whitewashed from WWE history or getting screwed. Being the Fiend.
I wondered where you were going to go. Yeah, like being the Fiend is worse than a burial is what I've argued here, is because, like, the thing with the burial is, and I think that applies to most ones we talk about, Jeff Jarrett finds his happy ending always, but fundamentally he was going to lose work when his Turner contract ran out and Wendy Richter got sacked and so on and so on. Bray Wyatt, as the Fiend, has been buried like more than once, and this character's 2 years old, right? So yeah, he's been buried more times than this character's had years on the clock. But it makes so much goddamn money that it's going to keep happening.
Mm.
He is trapped in the burial loop of being the Fiend.
Yeah.
Because every now and then they're going to bring him back. Some people are going to get their hopes up. Not us. Not anymore. No. Some people are going to get their hopes up. He might win a few, whatever. And then he's going to get buried again. But in that time, that character is going to flog t-shirts or masks or 6 grand belts or whatever. Or indeed, capture the attention of an audience. How unnerving was it that the ratings stayed so solid for Raw over the 6 months that Randy Orton and the Fiend were feuding?
Yeah.
Right? That he appeals to some people, but not in the way that WWE aren't completely willing to just do him in with the greatest of ease. You know, I'm referencing the WrestleMania loss to Randy Orton, but also the loss to Bill Goldberg.
Mm-hmm.
I still love the arrangement of weapons. The sledgehammer to the chair, to the toolbox, to the face from Seth Rollins in a Hell in a Cell match with no stoppages.
Where he tried to, let's not forget, where he tried to impale someone with a comedy hammer.
Yeah. 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 He found Doink's hammer under the ring. Has a match to his liking, the Firefly Inferno match, where he ends up being set on fire.
Yeah.
Infantilizes a woman who is not so infantile that she can't turn on him. Like, and have him lose to single RKO, 6 minutes. Even just like, remember the jokes before WrestleMania. Well, Orton did him in 9 minutes with the projections, so at least he's going to get longer than that. And he didn't. Like, for that trilogy to complete itself properly, Orton's got to beat him in 3 at the next WrestleMania. Like, this character is a disaster, but it is unfortunately the living embodiment of WWE. That is to say, it is a persistent failure that makes an absolute fortune.
Mm.
The Fiend is 2021 WWE.
Yeah, and you're right. And in terms of, you know, we're not just shooting on The Fiend here. What I'm saying is, like, people, it's divisive. Let's admit that, The Fiend. Some people love it, some people hate it. We're not going to talk about that. It's certainly very, very creative. But at the end of the day, like you say, it all boils down to Vince McMahon and how he feels on the day. The WrestleMania is a perfect example. We all knew going into that, well, The Fiend wins. Obviously, The Fiend wins because he needs to get, you know, from what happened to where we are. And Vince just woke up. And that was the plan. And Vince just woke up and went, nah, give it Orton. And then we'll put him in somewhat with Riddle after WrestleMania. It's like, there's no plan there. I'm sure that Bray Wyatt would have presented them with a plan of, like, I do this and then here's where I go. And it's not necessarily a world title thing, or even he goes away for a while as he has now. But when he comes back, at least you go, oh, bloody hell, well, look what he did to Randy Orton in the end. Like, and he survived for a while. Just like you say, you know what this boils down to? And it's a phrase many football fans, particularly football fans who support teams like you and I do in Sunderland and Chesterfield, who are perennial, I don't mean to have a go, but it's my team as well, perennial losers. Like, yeah. You want to watch a team who wins games all the time? Go and support Man City, or go and support Real Madrid, or whoever it may be. You support these teams because they're from where you're from, or you have some sort of familial connection to it. And the phrase that always comes back, and it is personified by The Fiend and people who are fans of The Fiend, is the hope that kills you.
I can take
getting battered all the time. I can take my favorite wrestlers losing. But it's when you go, hang on, maybe if this goes all right, whether it be football or wrestling related, there could be something big at the end of all this. And then either at the final hurdle, or generally with Chesterfield in the first round, it goes out the window. But that's The Fiend, isn't it? Because we're not saying, you know, The Fiend gets buried. But the fate that is worse than getting buried is getting buried, but then thinking, there might be some light at the end of that tunnel. And then it turns out to just be more goo.
So you're telling me there's a muscle man dance? Right there. Yeah, that's a tunnel with more goo. Like, I just think sums it up, because that's what he's waded through his entire WWE career, is a tunnel of goo. I feel sometimes we have to be very clear about what we're talking about here, because I don't particularly have any affection for the supposed creative genius of Bray Wyatt, but lots of people do. Bray Wyatt I'm talking about now.
See, I do. I like how, you know, it's scatterbrained and some of it doesn't hit for me all the time. But I'd rather that than when they went to Dolph Ziggler, right, let's have your hair dyed brown and cut short and, you know, just generic wrestler 101.
I think in another time, it would have worked because they would have cared enough about the rules of the universe to ensure that The Fiend, like, was the only character to play outside of them, like The Undertaker did, which is why that comparison is so harebrained when you see it all the time. Well, The Undertaker did special effects supernatural stuff, yeah, and he was the only one that did, and it happened rarely, and half the time it did happen people mocked it. You absolutely have to keep everything else robust in order for one character to exist outside of it. You can't just have nothing matters because then absolutely nothing matters.
You've got TNA's undead realm, for example.
Yeah exactly, that, because it's own universe, totally fine. People have to understand that difference. We need to go over this over and over and over again until absolutely everybody gets it. The man who returned from being burned alive was defeated with an RKO in 6 minutes. Like, because it was a phase, effectively it was an entrance music distraction. I know it was Alexa Bliss on a Jack in the Box, but that was what it was. He was made to stand still. Like, to extend this beyond completely burying The Fiend, it's Tuesday today. We previewed Raw this morning. Sorry, reviewed Raw this morning. And my point was, Randy Orton, absolutely fine coughing up tar, but can't cope with a trombone at ringside. Like, same problem. You need to, like, be much clearer with the rules of the universe to even have, like, human characters with strange quirks like Randy Orton exist, let alone psychotic murder clowns that may or may not be real. Like, Goldberg, right? Goldberg squashed him. Terrible booking, yes. Like, all that is, we can just say that objectively. The Fiend stood up at the end of that, do you remember? And then, like, he disappeared. So that was their way of saying, ah, he's fine, because he stood up and he disappeared. If he can stand up and levitate to the back or however the hell he got back to the showers. How was he pinned off a crap jackhammer in a minute? It's a profound failure that represents WWE's contemporary storyline, profound failures in the fact that it makes money in spite of itself.
Wrong. Well, let us know your thoughts on fates in WWE worse than burial in the on Twitter, in fact, at What Culture WWE. Well, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at What Culture WWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling for more of this sort of thing, more of these lists, more previews and reviews, all the stuff you want, all the good wrestling content every single day. And also check out this whole article. Just search for 10 WWE fates worse than burial at whatculture.com. But this has been another Top 10 Debate. My thanks to this article's author, Michael Hamflett, for joining me. Thank you for joining us as well. And we will see you soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.